The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will share with you information from various medical sources. The Wall Street Journal. Our nap breaks the new lunch breaks. Resting studios offer personal sleeping pods to weary workers looking for a midday recharge. But $15 is a lot to pay for nothingness. I have 200 emails to answer, pointless meetings to attend, extravagant expenses to submit, but it's 2 p.m. and I'm hobbling through a productivity slump. Science says short daytime naps could improve alertness and work performance, but I can't just drop my head on my desk to catch a few Z's. And, unfortunately, my office is a long way off from installing napping pods a la Facebook and Google. So instead, I sneak away to a nearby nap studio where I can actually pay to rest my soul before going another round with my inbox. Those quiet spaces tend to be outfitted in natural elements that give the senses a break from the concrete glass and flashing screens that typically surround droopy-eyed workers. They provide an optimized environment for sleep, from cool temperatures to total darkness to quiet, says Christopher Winter, MD, president of Charlottesville Neurology and Sleep Medicine in Virginia, and author of The Sleep Solution. The odds are good that the shut-eye you get there, even brief, will be high quality. At Nap York, a Manhattan sleep center painted in soothing shades of gray, I opt for a 30-minute power nap. Guests can choose from 30, 60, or 90-minute sessions starting at $15. And the site is napyork.com. An ideal length for an afternoon recharge, says Dr. Winter. Nap York's floors are soundproofed with upcycled tires, while white noise machines emit a gentle hum. Guests who need a nudge toward oblivion can borrow noise-canceling headphones, use iPods preloaded with the meditation app Calm, and adjust reclining mattresses to prop their legs above their body, a position meant to promote blood flow. Though it was with skepticism that I shut the curtain on my cubby-like bunk after staring up at twinkling starlights on my pod ceiling for a few minutes, I felt my body fade. Cut to a buzzer under my pillow vibrating to revive me. After a 30-minute crash, I really did feel refreshed and reset. Similar resting lounges are popping up in Los Angeles, Dallas, London, and Madrid. At one, Recharge, which is spelled R-E-C-A-R-J, in Washington, D.C., beleaguered business folk, many seeking slumber during peak lunch hours, came out into ergonomic cocoons for 25 minutes with the aid of lavender-scented pillows, eye masks, 360-degree sound-dampening drapery, and optional earplugs for $9. Recharge also broadcasts binaural beats, sounds that aim to lure the brain into that transitional state of consciousness of light sleep, according to founder Daniel Torsini. Businesses are starting to understand that sleep is at the root of all that wellness, Mr. Torsini says. If that domino falls, they all fall. So here we are paying $15 per half hour to enjoy what we once hated in preschool. And that's by Ashley Matteo. From the Wall Street Journal under Life and Arts, by Thomas Burton, The Scan That Saved My Life. After years of exercise and healthy eating, a reporter's blocked artery came as a shock, the debate over tests to prevent strokes. Let's talk about your test results, my neurologist said. She looked as if she had good news. Instead, it was shocking. The carotid artery on the left side of my neck, one of the brain's two main sources of blood and oxygen, was clogged with fatty plaque, the doctor said. The artery was almost completely blocked. This must be a mistake, I thought frantically. I exercise and am healthy and young. Actually, I'm 68, but, you know, a young 68. You're in danger of a major stroke, she said, and need an operation immediately. The irony wasn't lost on me. As a journalist covering the medical field, I have spent years writing about strokes, most of which are caused by clots blocking blood flow to the brain. Now, I face the unnerving question, am I going to become a weird punchline? As in, did you see that the guy who writes all those stories about strokes just had the big one? A blocked carotid artery didn't seem possible for an active person like me. I've never smoked, I've run, lifted weights, or done something aerobic like playing tennis pretty much every day of my life. I watch what I eat. I even wrote an article about how I kept my bad cholesterol in check with diet and exercise, not medication. While I'm addicted to cheese and my weight has climbed some, I've eaten foods like salmon and oatmeal with fervor for more than 20 years, so I figured I was exempt from medical crises. The diagnosis made me reconsider dilemmas that had once seemed academic. For example, should older Americans be screened for blocked carotid arteries? Clots cause about 700,000 strokes that lead to 130,000 deaths annually in the United States and are the primary preventable cause of disability, according to the American Stroke Association. Carotid disease is a main cause of these strokes, nearly 200,000 strokes a year, vascular specialists say, yet 80% of those patients have no symptoms before the strokes. In 2014, a U.S. task force concluded that people with no symptoms don't have to be screened for carotid disease, saying that the risks, such as poor surgery, outweigh the benefits. But the task force, a panel of private doctors assigned by law to help set U.S. medical policy, focused on screening in the general population, not older patients. The task force said there aren't enough carotid-caused strokes to warrant screening everyone. Of course, not everyone with carotid blockage will get surgery. Thousands of people with the condition can benefit from drug therapy. My experience, along with some evidence from screening of thousands of individuals, raises questions about the task force conclusions. The Society for Vascular Surgery recommends screening people over 65 with coronary disease, high blood pressure, or a history of smoking. The task force generally supports screening Americans for breast cancer, with 253,000 new cases in women and 41,000 estimated deaths annually, as well as colorectal cancer with 135,000 new cases and 50,000 deaths a year. Government and private insurance pay to screen for these illnesses, but not for carotid screening of non-symptomatic people, which can cost about $70 a person. After hearing the jarring news about my dangerously blocked carotid, I faced a big decision. My wife, Krista, and I live near Washington, D.C. Our daughter, Maddie, was supposed to be married in San Francisco in June, a week after the neurologist told me I needed surgery right away. Suddenly, the prospect of being at the wedding seemed iffy. Conventional wisdom says that among the 65 and older set, only those with symptoms should be tested. That often means individuals who have had many strokes, which tend to be brief periods in which the patient has something wrong with one side of the body, usually for a few minutes. Symptoms often include slurred speech, temporary vision loss, and one-sided facial droop, and arm or leg weakness or numbness. Vascular surgeon George Levinson, Jr., wrote in 2012 in the Journal for Vascular Ultrasound that among 22,146 people screened for carotid disease during four public screening campaigns between 2001 and 2006, about 7.5% were found to have blockage of 60% or more enough to warrant treatment with medications. It is hard to understand how many leaders in the medical profession can object to a 1 to 2 minute accurate screen of seniors that can find 7.5% with silent carotid artery disease, Dr. Levinson said. Those patients can be evaluated and managed to prevent them from being one of the 700,000 clot-caused strokes we continue to have annually. Most doctors would have put me in this asymptomatic or less risky category, but 5 years ago I went out for a run of about 7 miles along the Potomac River. At the end of the run, my right leg started shaking. That seldom happened again until the past few months when it started reoccurring more often along with shaking in my right arm. My physician, Joel Taubman, recommended a neurologist, Ronnie Hertzfeld, of the Neurology Center in Washington. She prescribed tests to discern the cause of the shaking, perhaps the pinched nerve, incipient epilepsy, or a neurological disorder or tumor. The results ruled them all out. Then an MRI of my head showed a few white spots on the left side. Dr. Hertzfeld wondered if I might have some silent stroke, sending tiny bits of artery plaque floating to my brain and now appearing as white spots on the scan. Fatty plaque accumulates in most people's arteries and can form clots that break off and can cause strokes. Dr. Hertzfeld ordered a carotid ultrasound of the arteries on both sides of my neck. It's a quick, painless, and very accurate scan. Moments later, we were talking in her office. My right carotid artery was perfectly clear, she said. The left was almost completely blocked, and I needed immediate surgery to clear it. I asked if we could treat the obstruction with antiplatelet medication such as Plavix. No, your blockage is just too extensive, Dr. Hertzfeld said. She recommended that Bruce A. Perler, a professor of vascular surgery at Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore, do the procedure. The effectiveness of carotid artery surgery in people without symptoms but major blockage was established 2 decades ago by the asymptomatic carotid artery stenosis trial funded by the National Institutes of Health. It showed in hospitals in the U.S. and Canada that the risk of stroke or death in surgery patients after a median 2.7 years was 5.1%, less than half that of people treated only with drugs. An international study published in 2010 in The Lancet showed similar benefits from surgery. I consulted with other doctors, including one who said, "This isn't quite an emergency, but it's urgent. The operation is serious, with the rates of stroke and death within 30 days after surgery totaling about 2.4% in major studies examined by the task force." The task force noted that this typical measure can be as high as 5% at some low-volume hospitals. People considering this operation should ask their hospital, surgeon, or academic medical center about the rates of stroke and death after surgery. Few hospitals and surgeons in the U.S. published their individual results. Dr. Perler's rate was well under 1%. He said, "My risk of stroke was 10-15% over 5 years, probably in the first year." A week before Maddie's wedding, my wife and I met with Dr. Perler at Johns Hopkins. On the drive to Baltimore, we called Maddie. She sounded frightened, and I told her maybe I wouldn't need surgery or could put it off. We also told her brothers, Jamie and Will, and her sister, Samantha, what was going on. Dr. Perler's test confirmed Dr. Hertzfeld's findings. I definitely needed surgery. My artery was almost completely obstructed by it. Echolucent plaque, a type that can easily form clots, break off, and cause strokes. We discussed timing. Dr. Person said Person's next surgery day was June 18th. That would leave me 4 days to recover before the wedding. He warned that I would be miserable doing that, but his surgery day after that wasn't until June 27th. "You can safely wait until next week," he said, "but I wouldn't wait 2 months. Then he added the words I remember most: "We'll take good care of you." My wife and I decided on June 27th and headed to San Francisco for the wedding. It was an ultra-traditional ceremony, and I'm sorry, it was an untraditional ceremony with no white veil or parade of bridesmaids. Maddie wore a champagne-colored beaded dress. I've never seen her so happy, except maybe when she was playing My Little Pony as a six-year-old. I was simply happy to be there. On the morning of June 27th, Dr. Perlow started operating at 7:30. Within 2 hours, he had cleared the plaque from my carotid artery. Larry told me it was so clogged, about 99%, he couldn't even detect a pulse in it. When I woke up, I was relieved to see that my eyes and fingers all worked. I could think and speak clearly. I was even able to complain to the nurses about how lousy I felt. I spent 2 days in an intensive care with my blood pressure surging at times. About 2 weeks after the operation, I felt pretty normal. I've resumed running and weightlifting. I recently played golf for the first time since the surgery and felt great. But mostly, I feel lucky to have gotten a test that may have saved my life. From Parade Magazine, it's about time. Why Dr. Oz is fasting and using the clock to lose weight, slow dementia, and fight disease. How does Mehmet Oz, MD, the star of the Dr. Oz show, beginning his 10th season on September 17th, keep healthy, upbeat, and way trimmer than the average 58-year-old grandpa? He'll tell you it's all a matter of time. Exciting new discoveries about the timers within our cells, trillions of them, priming our bodies to work efficiently and are transforming health care, Dr. Oz says. Science has always been focused on the what drugs we give to treat disease, what we eat to lose weight, he says. Up until now, we haven't just underestimated time, we've completely ignored its role. We're now starting to see that when can be just as important. In fact, using the power of time to prevent disease and treat it is among the biggest medical breakthroughs Oz has seen since launching his show. And that's saying something, considering he's taped 1,575 episodes about health, healing, and the far frontiers of medicine. Here's how time can help us live better. When you eat. New studies suggest that when you eat matters for your health, longevity, and even weight loss, Oz says. The average American eats pretty much all day long throughout the 17 hours that most of us are awake. Our intestines aren't supposed to work 17 hours a day, he says. Before drive-thrus, microwaves, and refrigerators, the human body evolved to go for long stretches without food. During these breaks, vital things happen. Insulin levels drop, which makes stored body fat more accessible for use. Human growth hormone goes up to help burn fat and build muscle. Damaged cell material is shed faster, called autophagy, or autophagy, I guess. Even the way genes are expressed changes. All this may help us to lose weight or stick to a healthy weight. Studies show that people who fast, basically not eating for a set period, usually at least 12 hours, tend to consume fewer calories overall and lose more belly fat. A large 2017 study of Seventh-day Adventists found that those with the lowest body mass index, or BMI, had a long overnight fast of 18 or more hours and ate their largest meal at breakfast. Slow Alzheimer's. It's in animal studies. Fasting appears to halt cognitive decline to the point where older subjects perform as well as younger ones. Fasting triggers a switching over from using glucose as fuel to fatty acids, a state known as mild ketosis. One theory is that this metabolic switching made the brain, Oz says. Also, the release of chemicals that cause inflammation is a side effect of digestion. Too much brain inflammation is one factor thought to fuel Alzheimer's. Grow a healthier gut. Other animal studies suggest that feeding/fasting rhythms can contribute to the diversity of microorganisms in the gut. There's huge interest in gut health's role in metabolic diseases like diabetes, insulin resistance, and obesity, as well as autoimmune disorders. Prevent other diseases, and maybe even slow aging. Fasting can reduce inflammation in people with asthma and rheumatoid arthritis by also reducing blood pressure and increasing insulin sensitivity. It adds protection against cancer, diabetes, heart disease, and stroke. When you don't eat, fasting in a consistent pattern, intermittent fasting, or IF, seems key. This time, restricted feeding, confining all eating to a certain window of time, works for Oz. He's in his second year of eating all his meals and snacks in a 12-hour period, usually between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. He then fasts for the next 12 hours. He says, 12-12 intermittent fasting prevents hunger better than dieting and tends to be more sustainable as a lifestyle because it's not so isolating. You're not nursing a juice cleanse while your friends down tacos. All you have to do is sleep 8 hours, which helps with just about every chronic health problem anyway, and then you have a 4 hour left of not eating. He explains, stop eating at least 2 hours before bed. In the morning, instead of automatically grabbing breakfast, have a cup of black coffee, tea, or water. Most people aren't truly hungry when they wake up, he adds. I like it because it's easy to do and I feel sharper, he says. I'm hacking my system to be able to function at a higher level. Mice fed on a 12-12 cycle lose weight even though they eat the same number of calories as mice who eat all day, studies show, and they're healthier. Plus, in 12-12 fasting, you can pick the 12 off hours that work best for you. Late party, hold off eating till noon the next day. Breakfast meeting you can't miss, stop eating earlier the evening before. When you get medicine, another way time influences health is chronotherapy, which considers natural rhythms when treating diseases. This can have powerful effects, especially on how medications work. Better flu shots. Get yours in the morning, suggests Oz. A large clinical trial found more protective antibodies were created then versus late afternoon. Stronger chemo, fewer side effects. Just like any other cell, cancer cells grow and rest on a circadian cycle. Cancer chemotherapy works by attacking rapidly growing cells, Oz explains, by figuring out cancer's rhythm. We may be able to administer drugs at the time when the cancer is most vulnerable to the effects. Lung cancer patients given the drug cisplatin, for example, have fewer side effects when it was time to work with the kidney's circadian rhythm. More effective blood pressure medications. For studies of drugs to lower hypertension, research suggests that using a full 24 hours of blood pressure data to inform a medication schedule can reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease and stroke. Similar research is underway in every corner of medicine. Have past drugs failed because of timing errors? Are some ailments caused by broken body clocks that can be fixed? Last fall's Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine went to three scientists who proved how circadian rhythms work right down on the molecular level. Have you ever realized you've been completely unaware of something you should be thinking about? Oz says. Time is one of those fundamental assumptions of life that you have to get your arms around. When you do this, you begin to realize that it affects you in many ways. More medical breakthroughs. Dr. Oz identifies these other big ideas that are quickly transforming healthcare. Virtual reality. Special computer programs, headsets, gloves, and other equipment let people experience what doesn't exist. Used to train surgeons and pilots, it's now a tool to help stroke or brain injury patients in rehab gain mobility and balance and allow legally blind people with macular degeneration to see. A health coach in your phone. Imagine your phone picking up insights about your mood and health based on your voice, your social media usage, and other factors, then offering you an immediate way to respond and improve. Drug therapy. Though Oz says he has never smoked a joint, he's all for the therapeutic potential of substances once ignored on moral grounds. LSD and psilocybin, a compound produced in magic mushrooms, are gaining credibility as treatments for anxiety, depression, and addiction because they silence the default pathway in the brain that causes rumination, the ability to live well with cancer, thanks to rapid advances in immunotherapy, stem cell treatments, genetic testing, and more, cancer is increasingly becoming a manageable chronic disease rather than something you have or don't have. Dr. Oz, what I've learned. Nearly a decade of the Dr. Oz show has meant one thing for sure. I don't have to tell people that canola is spelled with a Q anymore, he says with a laugh. More lessons. The value of recharging. The show is incredibly demanding. I can't afford not to be 100%. I use music and meditation to relax. Number two, feelings motivate people more than facts. You don't tell cigarette smokers to stop because they're going to die. They know that already. I get them to realize that if they love themselves as much as the people around them do, they'd never do that to themselves. It puts an emotional underline on in it. Three, the power of habit. Figure out what you love that happens to be healthy and focus on doing that regularly. Everything's connected. The body is the temple of the soul, so your spiritual journey includes your health. Five, insomnia is a huge problem. When I was training in surgery, we were taught that if you could train yourself to do things without sleep, it made you a better doctor. It's the opposite. You're more creative and able to perform better if you sleep more. It's not a sign of weakness. Prioritize it, and you should be sleeping long enough to dream. Six, nothing is healthier than having friends. After looking at the data, I'm convinced. So don't isolate yourself. We have an epidemic of loneliness. Seven, be weight smart. Reduce calories to lose weight. Exercise to keep weight down, not vice versa. Number eight, reinvent your relationships every 7 years. If you don't grow together, you will grow apart. My wife, Lisa, of 33 years, and I are doing this right now, carving out time together. Number nine, ask questions. If you're having issues, ask, what's causing people to do that? What do people need to do to feel better about a situation? In medicine, that's how we do it. By asking the right question, you might get the right answer. And finally, number 10, if you give people a chance to surprise you, they will. It's amazing how much we overestimate what can be accomplished in a week and how much we underestimate what can be accomplished in a year. FDA approves first migraine prevention drug. Encouraging news for people who suffer with migraines. In May, the FDA approved Arunubab, or AIMOVIG, the first medication aimed at preventing these debilitating medicines. And we will talk more about this our next time. Thanks. Because you've heard the music, it's run out of time. We've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time, and if you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138 and stay healthy.